Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Petrified Podcast. I'm your host, Damian Martinez, here with my co-host,
Eric Lover.
And today, in memory of the recently deceased Tony Todd, we decided to do our episode on Candyman, probably one of his most iconic roles in the horror franchise. Obviously, he has tons of credits, especially in the horror genre. You know, Final Destination being probably the second biggest one. But yeah, so we decided to do this episode on him, and yeah, just kind of go through his movie, not his movie, but you know, a movie that probably made him.
Yeah, one of his most memorable roles. Definitely,
yeah, pretty much. So, yeah, it came out in 1992, and yeah, it's pretty much just about an artistic slave. Pretty much, his father was a shoemaker, right?
Yep,
and he pretty much went around and he painted portraits of people and
for plantation owners.
Yeah, plantation and owners, like, and pretty much all that. And one of them wanted him to paint for his
daughter.
His daughter.
Yeah.
Because she had virgin beauty. So she was ready, you know.
She was radiating.
Yeah.
She
was just virgin beauty. And they ended up falling in love. And I'm assuming either got her pregnant or stuff happened between them, obviously.
I think things just happened and they were found out, obviously, by, you know, the elite.
Yeah.
And
he got some goons to go and pretty much, you know, teach him a lesson. And they captured him, stripped him of all of his clothes and smothered him honey. And bees on him and chopped his artistic hand off so he couldn't paint anymore and stuck a hook in it. And that's how we would have to die. And now, you know, flash forward to 1990s, and he's pretty much wreaking havoc in, was it Cabrini Green,
Chicago.
Yeah. In Chicago. And is pretty much trying to keep his memory alive of what happened to him. And his whole character is pretty much, yeah, trying to keep his what happened to him alive so people know who he is. And by doing that is having to kill these people that say his name five times and having this fear instilled in this community. And that's what keeps him going. And you see it when he's killing people. You see it when he's, you know, he has hurt in his eyes. Even though he slashes up a bunch of people,
he's always shedding tears.
And yeah.
You can feel like a remorse that he isn't doing what he wants to be doing. He's obviously a creative force.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, due to what fate has dealt him, he has become a destructive force.
Yeah.
So.
And, oh my gosh, I can't believe I forgot the main girl's name. Helen.
Helen.
Yeah, they're doing a paper, her and one of her colleagues, her friends. They're doing a whole report on him, pretty much, doing a whole thesis. And so they go to Cabrini Green, and this white girl and this other girl that's with her black friend, who looks biracial, they go into this hood area to go check the one of the rooms of this pretty much rundown housing complex.
Yeah.
That one of them was murdered in, that people think it was Candyman. But of course she doesn't think that. She thinks that it's just, you know.
Yeah, it's just urban legend.
Yeah.
It's all speculation.
All these people are just killing themselves. It's just this, nothing to worry about.
Well, she probably thought that it was, in all actuality, that was just another, you know, random homicide in Cabrini Green. It was a notoriously violent housing complex.
Yeah.
So she probably just figured, you know, it's just something and urban legend, and they're just trying to feed into this backstory that there's this Candyman. Because, you know, we've all heard the stories. You know, we've heard them under the premise of Bloody Mary.
Yeah.
You go in the mirror, you say Bloody Mary three times, and oh my goodness, what happens? Bloody Mary comes out and captures you, you know,
or kills you, something like that.
Yeah, they had the backstory that essentially in this community, it's Candyman.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what she does, go figure it out. And yeah, dude, Tony Todd's character as Candyman, because she does, you know, figure out what's going on, obviously. She runs into the neighborhood Candyman, I guess you could say. He has a hook in his hand, and that's probably what she thought was. He was pretty much like the gang lord over the whole area.
Yeah.
And pretty much they beat the crap out of her and leave her in one of the bathrooms.
They leave
there,
her, there's an old abandoned bathroom that's all painted over
and
everything, and pretty much the drug kingpin or whatever he is of the time,
yeah,
is there, and he hits her in the face with a hook, and
yeah.
just essentially, you know, it could be dismissed at that time. She could have kind of just been like, oh, you know, that's it. That's really what it yeah. is. It's just this drug kingpin, and he's just intimidating people by using this, you know, this old story.
Yeah, he's in jail now, so it's no longer
it's no longer viable. Yeah.
But you took away the belief in the community. So now the real Candyman comes after her because she was the one who put the doubt in the people about the story of Candyman. So now he confronts her in the parking garage. And dude, his demeanor, the way he walks. I compared it to like a Black Dracula, like, you know, because he has that suave. He has the voice, you know, he pretty much entices her. He puts her under his spell of, you know, that she needs to come with him, that, you know, it's like a romantic kind of connection that they're having. And of course she's in fear, but at the same time, she's kind of like somewhat
she's submissive.
Yeah. She's somewhat submissive. And so he pretty much makes her black out. And then she wakes up in the apartment of one of the ladies that lived in that complex. And she's just covered in blood. And the Rottweiler that the lady have, his head's cut off.
Yeah.
It is a brutal scene. And the baby that she had is gone. And it's just, yeah. And the mom pretty much is like yelling at Helen because like you took my baby, you killed her, because there's just blood everywhere. So she attacks Helen. Helen doesn't know what the heck is going on because she blacked out. Candyman put her under some spell, and she just woke up in her apartment with blood all over her. And yeah, so she attacks her. She grabs the cleaver that was used to cut the dog's head off. And by that time, she's over on top of the mom, trying to get her to calm down. But it looks like that she's trying to kill her,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, she's trying to.
And the cops come in at the bad moment. And now she's pretty much.
She's under arrest.
She's under arrest.
Yeah, that's all there is to it, basically. Attempted homicide.
Yeah, yeah.
You're getting the charge.
Yeah. So, but they couldn't charge her because they couldn't find the baby. Because she doesn't know where it is, obviously, because Candyman took it and put him somewhere that no one knows. But of course, going through all this, you know, he's not going to leave her alone, because you're starting to take the doubt out of the people that are supposed to believe in me and to keep my memory alive.
Yeah.
And so I have to get rid of you now, because, you know, you can't mess with my legacy. And again, confronts her in the apartment, and her friend shows up, and when she goes in to help her because she's yelling on the inside, he kills her. Just, yeah. And you can see the tears in his eyes. Like, he doesn't want to do it, but he has to do it. He has to keep his memory alive. He has to stay. His legacy has to keep going, because if not, then he no longer exists.
Yeah, he basically, his strength is brought through the fear of others.
Yeah.
So the fact that the community remembers him and keeps him in remembrance is what continues to feed Candyman.
Yeah. Yeah, to keep him going and keep him alive, pretty much. And so she has to get committed because, of course, her husband comes in at the wrong time. And it looks like she killed her friend. So they arrest her. They put her in an institution. And while she was there for a month, but she doesn't remember it. For her, it's like a day.
Thorazine, folks. Thorazine.
Yeah, Thorazine, yeah.
It'll make you shuffle for a month. No problem. No problem.
Oh, yeah. It'll keep her. It kept her under pretty good, man.
Yeah.
And when she comes, I guess when she kind of, you know, when she gets, what is it? Like, she's having the interview with the guy to kind of see
she's
where
she's basically being evaluated.
Oh, yeah, being evaluated.
To
sorry,
see
yeah.
If she's, you know, if she's equitable to be released.
Yeah. Or to go under trial.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's saying, you know, that, you know, she didn't do any of that. But when they play the tape back of when she was first admitted, she's talking to Candyman, but on the camera, of course, you can't see anything. So she's like, no, that's not possible. Like, I saw him. He was there. I felt him. He was there. So she tries to prove that he's real by telling the guy that, look, I'm going to call on him and he'll be here. So she does it in the mirror that he has conveniently placed right across from her face.
Yeah, in the office, you know, when somebody's talking about Candyman, you always want to leave a convenient mirror around.
Yeah. So she does that. She calls him five times. And at first you're like, okay. Like
nothing's happening. Yeah. Like, it's like, it's all for naught. Nothing's going to happen.
Yeah. And then Candyman puts his hook right up the dude, just works like a Muppet.
He pops out right from behind the chair and takes care of business. Hook right through the doctor and...
Yeah, and proves, like, I got to, like... It's like a love connection. At the same time, he has to do what he has to do.
Yeah, it's very like, Dracula-esque, like you were stating. So it's very star-crossed lovers. It's very, you know, a love that goes beyond all time. Because you can even see when Helen first sees him, there's, like, this...
Yeah, connection.
This connection. Yeah. It's like, well, where do I know you from kind of a deal.
Yeah.
Even though they've never met, they've never had any interaction.
Yeah.
You get the sense that they're kind of alluding to the fact that it's... You know, it's this love story that spans all time.
Yeah.
So now the doctor's got the hook through him. And Helen finally, like, literally, like, up to her favor, she finally wakes up.
I mean,
and the fact that she's finally like, hey, I got my butt kicked because somebody cut the head off a dog and the lady started beating the hell out of me. I didn't kill the dog. I didn't take the baby.
Yeah.
Then it's, oh, hey, my best friend got her face all, like, mashed up and she got killed.
Yeah.
They blame me for it. Now I'm in the mental institute. So now finally she's like, wait a minute, the doctor's dead.
Yeah, and he frees her.
Yeah.
He cuts her leather straps off.
He cuts the leather straps, and she finally comes to the realization, hey, if I don't want to end up somewhere else for another 100 years, I'm going to climb my butt out this window right here.
Oh, yeah.
So the escape attempt begins.
That scene was pretty cool. After he talks to Helen and kind of, you know, and I guess entices her one more time, he, like, freaking gets pulled out the window, or, like, flies out the window.
Oh, yeah. Dude. It's like almost like there's like a strap on his back and he gets pulled out the window. He just curls up into kind of like a little ball and out the window.
Dude, that was sick, man.
Yeah.
That was pretty good. I like that a lot. So, yeah, so she leaves and she goes to confront her husband, because at the beginning of the movie, like, her husband is, like, flirting with one of the students, I believe.
Yeah.
And
as undergrad, I think.
So. And so he, you know, Helen's just like, you know, like, hey, you know, she doesn't like me. Like, she, you know, she just gave me a smirk or whatever. Like, she doesn't, you know, she's very dismissive. He's like, oh, you know, maybe she's in love with me, like, jokingly. And I'm like, oh, there's something going on between these two. Like, this dude is definitely smashing taters on the side.
Yep.
Like, he's getting some. But he's like, no, like, it's just maybe she, you know, she just likes me, whatever, joking around. And so there's, like, this whole talk. And then when she gets arrested the first time, she goes to jail. She calls home, but he's not there. And so it's like, oh, like, he's out, you know, messing around.
Yeah, because it's nighttime. It's not a time where, like, you know, where a professor would still be at work.
Yeah, unless, like, he had to work late, like, to get stuff, whatever. But he's not going to be there that late.
Yeah, it's kind of given the attention that, like, this is out of the normal. He's not normally out at this hour of the night.
Oh, because it was 3 a.m. Yeah, there's no reason. Yeah, there's no reason.
There's no reason for a professor to be out at 3 a.m.
Yeah, so. Unless he's getting
something's going on.
he's tutoring is what he's doing.
Yeah.
At 3 in the morning.
Tutoring.
So at the end, when she escapes after the doctor gets killed, she goes to her house, you know? That's the last place she can go to. She wants to see her husband. Like, she wants to be with him. But when she goes in, dude, everything is being redecorated.
Oh, yeah.
The walls are pink.
They're painting everything, like, Pepto-Bismol pink.
Yeah, pretty
much. It's just god-awful horrible. And there's this, like, Millie Mouse, like, co-ed in her house. Just like, oh, Tommy, what do you think of the color scheme? Like, I love it. And you could tell Trevor.
Yeah.
And she's just like, you know, you could tell he's just in it for the nookie. He doesn't care. You could have painted.
Dude, when she walks in and then she sees Helen, she, like, immediately curls up and starts crying and calls for Trevor. And he's like, oh, did you get another little boo-boo in this? I'm like, dude, you're too old to be talking like that. So, yeah, he walks in. And then finally, obviously, now the tension's high because Helen's there and she's supposed to be committed.
Yeah, she's in a mental institution and here she is off her meds in your kitchen and you're shacked up with the 21-year-old co-ed.
Yeah, dude's an ass, dude. Like, she goes, he knew that she was going to get locked up, that she was crazy, and he was just like, all right, well, let's just bring in the new girl and it'll be fine. And then when you get confronted by your wife...
Yeah.
Because he's technically still married.
Yeah, and there's no remorse to it. There's no shame to his game. He's just, he's about what he's about. He's just, He's a scandalous individual.
Yeah. So obviously she sees that, you know, she's lost everything now. And so she goes and she, you know, runs off, and she is pretty much on this bridge looking out to the water, and Candyman's pretty much talking to her. And he was right, because he says that, you know, the only, you know, you have nothing now. Like, the only thing you have left is my desire for you. Like, that's all you have now. And so she's like, well, I might as well just fully submit and just give in. So she goes back to the complex, to the housing area, and goes to the cabinet, pretty much like the hole in the wall that's behind the mirror.
Because, yeah, it's an old area where a medicine cabinet was removed.
Yeah.
And obviously the residents of Cabrini Green have done art. The art's another great thing about this movie.
Yeah.
So they've done all this art in commemoration. Like, the whole story of Candyman is detailed in frescoes all over the walls.
Yeah.
So that's when she goes back through this fallen medicine cabinet and crawls back into the foreground because she can hear the baby crying.
Yeah.
So at that point, you obviously, Candyman's exposed that, you know, I think it was Ellie Mae was the baby's name.
I think it might have been.
I think it was Ellie Mae. And so she crawls back through the wall to go and basically retrieve the baby.
Yeah.
And through this, Candyman kind of gives him a tour of her, of his world.
Yeah. He's pretty much, yeah. And they're doing this whole kind of like very slow dance with each other. Like, she's under his spell. Like he has her now. That's it. And she just needs to like fully submit to him, and that's it. And he's pretty much, you know, trying to entice her to just give in. Like, that's it. Like, just give in to me. And the cool part about it is he finally exposes, or he talks about, you know, what has happened to him, that he was on the walls. So there's like that mural of him being chased by the people that cut off his hand. And there's the scene where he gets his hand cut off and is covered in honey because of the bees and all that. And then back to him, and he's like, he exposes his chest, which is just a rib cage.
That's filled with bees.
Yeah, covered in bees.
Yeah.
Bees are in his mouth, which are real bees. And he said that he worked with millions of bees. He got paid $1,000
per sting. Tony Todd got paid.
Dude.
So he got stung 28 times in the course of the filming. And he made an additional $28,000 bonus.
Dude, that's
But shit. You can't pay me enough money. You cannot give me enough cash money to put a handful of bees in my mouth.
$1,000 a sting.
You can go into
Aphylactic
shock. I am not dealing with $1,000 to basically go into aphylactic shock. No, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I think I would.
No,
dude, $1,000 a sting.
No. Put in the comments, would you put bees in your mouth?
Would you put bees in your mouth?
$1,000 per sting.
To pay for groceries.
28 grand, buy you a lot of groceries.
That's gas in your car. That's food on your table. And that's whatever else you want on the side. That's like bills paid right there, dude. I'll take $1,000 a sting for just bees. Anything else after that, like no wasps or
No yellow jackets,
nothing like that. No, it has to be bees.
Strictly bees. I don't know. I would have been like, you know, can we negotiate for some ants or something? Like,
you think ants would have been better?
No, man. Black ants, some big, like, or even cockroaches.
Cockroaches,
I'll put a cockroach in my mouth for a grand.
I hate cockroaches, man.
Spiders? I already know I'm allergic spiders. To spiders. Spiders would kill me.
Like, I'm allergic to ants.
I'm allergic to spiders.
Oh, okay.
So spiders would kill me.
Yeah.
Ants would kill you. But bees?
Bees, I think, is like the better. They're fuzzy. They look kind of cute, man.
They hurt. They inject the venom, and the barb stays in your mouth and continues to, you know, it's got a sac with venom in it that continues to go into your system after the bee's gone and dead. No.
I would still do
spiders, it's one shot, one kill. Spider comes in, nip, bam, you're hurt. Unless you're allergic, like I am. And then you're dead.
But it depends on the spider, too.
Well, that is true, because I've been bitten by a spider twice. I had to pay for anti-venom the first time. It was $14,000 a shot.
What'd you get bit by? A recluse? Or
no,
a
I got bit by my dad's. In my dad's house, he had a backyard, and there was this big, huge spider that came off the dock somewhere. like, because we live in the harbor, and so it came off like one of the boats or something. And I was living in the backyard, and I went out in the backyard, and I had a date that night, and a freaking spider dropped down and hit me in the neck, and my neck swelled. Oh man, it swelled up.
Did
so
you
big.
Try to see if you were Spider-Man at least?
Did not try. I literally went and called my dad. They were somewhere doing something that night, and he came and picked me up. They wouldn't take me to the emergency room until the next morning.
Yeah.
By that time, my neck was like two times its normal size, and I was already quite plump to begin with. So, yeah, a fat kid with a super fat neck, yeah. Went in, they dealt me with the antivenom, and charged me $14,000.
Were you allergic, or were you like...
I was allergic.
Or I was going to say, or did you get like bit by an actual exotic spider?
I got bit by an exotic spider, and I was allergic to the venom.
Oh, dude.
Because then, like maybe 9 or 10 months later, there was a spider in my shoe. And luckily, I found the spider in my shoe with my toe.
Ah.
And same thing. And yes, anti-venom again. So I guess if I would have taken all 28 bee stings at $28,000, then basically I could have paid for the anti-venom in both cases of being stung by the spiders.
So the bees.
By the bees. Yeah. So I'd have been all right.
I still would take the bees. I would take the bees over anything.
Ah.
Anyways, that was such a cool effect, though.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was cool. It was a cool practical effect.
Yeah, dude, yeah.
They really did it.
Well, Tony Todd knew it was going to be a memorable moment where he kisses her with the bees in his mouth.
Yeah.
Like, people are going to remember this. Let's do it. And, dude, it came out great. I mean, it's still an icon today.
Here we are, you know, geez, freaking 32 years later, still talking about it. Yeah. So, had to have done something right with it.
Yeah, dude, yeah.
So.
But, yeah, so he finally... pretty much entices her, but she decides to go and save the baby because the baby's gone now.
Baby Anthony, to clarify. Baby Anthony.
Baby Anthony?
Baby Anthony.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, because it's a boy.
Yeah, it's Baby Anthony.
Yeah. So she finally hears him out in the bonfire that they were going to have for a party, I guess like a block party or something.
Yeah, apparently Cabrini Green, how you get down when you have a party is you get like 9,000 pounds of garbage. Throw it in the middle of the courtyard, put gasoline all over it,
and light it
on fire, and revel the night away.
I mean, I've seen big bonfires like that, too.
Oh, yeah. We've picked up pallets.
But it's kind of odd, like, in the city.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I mean, you're in the middle of Chicago in a housing project, and you're going to, like, have a bonfire?
Yeah.
But, I mean, it is what it is, and so that's what they were going to do. They were going to parlay. So she looks out the window, and she sees the bonfire starting, and... all the residents, you know.
No, she hears the baby in the
bonfire. In the bonfire.
Yeah. In the pile. It's not lit yet, but she hears it in the pile, so she goes to look for it.
Yeah, all the residents are preparing it. And
And she goes in there, and she gets the baby, but Candyman gets her. And the kid that was with her when she got jacked, pretty much, by the fake Candyman, by Candyman Light, when she gets jacked by him... the kid that was helping her, he sees that the rubble moving in the bonfire. He thinks it's Candyman. So they all go out there. He warns everybody, like, no, Candyman's in there. So they all light fires and throw it into the bonfire. And Candyman is in there with her, but that's not what he saw. Like
He saw her with the baby.
Yeah. So she's trying to make it out of the fire now. And Candyman is, you know... he's trying to keep her in there so they can both die and pretty much live on forever.
Yeah, be together.
Yeah, and so he perishes in the fire somewhat because there's sequels. But he perishes in the fire, and she slowly makes it out. And they were going to start beating her when she came out because like, she had no hair. She was on fire.
Yeah, she's like, yeah.
She was
torn. Scarred up. She's messed up.
Yeah. And she's like all burnt up, and they finally realize like, oh, it's a woman in there. And she hands the baby over to the mom, and they put the fire out on her. And yeah, she's just all jacked up now. She dies.
Yeah, she lays down and she passes away.
And she becomes Freddy Krueger. But she does. She dies. And dude, this is so scummy of this guy. Trevor, her husband, goes to her funeral with his chick.
Yeah, with his co-ed dime piece.
Dude, I would have crawled out of my grave just to... And then, not only that, going back to this where she confronts them when she walks into her apartment, I would have just killed them right there. they already think I've killed like four people already. What's two more?
She has a conscience.
Okay, yeah, she does have a conscience, but still.
She does. I mean, like, you know, she's the heroine. She
true.
See, she can't do that stuff, but until
he goes back home. They go back home and he's mourning, and which, dude, like, why? You literally were cheating on her when she was alive, before she was even, you know, captured, you know, for attempted murder or murder. And you replaced her as soon as she got locked up. Like, why are you sad in the bathroom?
But then he goes and he locks himself in the bathroom. Here's the kicker. So he locks himself in the bathroom, and then he's such a scuzzbag that he already knows that essentially, you know, he knows, obviously, through talking to her, because they've diagnosed her as crazy. So he knows the back lore of Candyman and the fact that you say the name five times.
Yeah.
So now he decides, oh, wait a minute. Like, I'm going to go through and use the same Candyman knowledge on my dead ex-wife. Can you be more stupid? So anyways, he looks in the mirror and he Candymans her up. Says her name.
Yeah.
Five times in the mirror. To which she promptly responds and kills Trevor.
Yeah, and kills Trevor. Gets her revenge that was well deserved, because this dude was a scumbag.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so yeah. So yeah, you get a new Candyman pretty much. You get Helen.
Yeah.
Helen.
Yeah. You get Hurtful Helen.
Yeah, Hurtful.
Or Hurt Helen.
Helen.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah. You know.
But dude, yeah, this movie was so great, man, because you see, obviously, that, you know, he went through, that Candyman went through so much pain when he was, you know, when he got his hand cut off, when he was tortured with the honeys and the bee. And you see that he wants people to know what happened to him. But the only way he can keep his memory alive is for that community to still fear him and to know who he is. So he has to kill them. Anybody who he comes into contact with.
Well, yeah. It's very kind of like a religious principle also, is that he lives through the sacrifice and the honoring, you know, of his constituents.
Yeah.
You know, his followers. So he goes through, and that is, you know, that's some of the great stuff. And, you know, due to the fact that obviously it does have a lot to do, this movie does have a lot to do with, you know, biracial relationships.
Yeah.
Slavery.
Yeah.
The history of America. It goes through and it hits on a lot
of the inner city struggle, pretty much.
Absolutely. Yeah. The poverty, the fact that he is hiding out in a government subsidized housing, you know. So it went through, and what I kind of liked about it is this, you know, if you don't know about Candyman and you don't know the history of it, Candyman was actually, it was a short story in a Clive Barker novel.
Yeah.
And it was actually called The Forbidden.
Oh, The Forbidden. The Forbidden. Yeah.
And it was in volume one of the Books of Blood. And it was very Clive Barker from Liverpool.
Yeah.
So it had a lot of English lore in it. And, you know, Candyman, kind of the character, was not deemed Candyman. He had like little scissors for fingers. And it was kind of like strange and unique. Very.
Well, it was pretty much what you get now. It's just it wasn't a black man. It was like a monstrous, like dark entity, pretty much like a shadow person with a hook for a hand.
Yeah, it was kind of like what was that character's name in, was it The Conjuring?
Like the Hat Man?
Man with the hat.
The man with the hat, yeah.
Yeah, with the scissors. It was very much like that little pinstripe suit kind of a deal.
Okay, yeah.
It was very Eastern European.
Yeah.
You know, not necessarily Eastern European, but very European in its nature. And so when they actually brought this out and they were going to make the movie out of it, they actually consulted with Tony Todd. And
yeah, because what's his name? The director had already drawn up a African-American playing the part. And but he just didn't know who to cast as it until they saw Tony Todd. And
Tony Todd,
like, dude,
and
he looks just like him.
Yeah, he looks just like him. He looked a lot like the representations and the quick sketches that he had done.
Yeah.
And then to bring him in and then get his input, obviously, as being a man of color in a lead role.
Yeah.
And so Tony Todd went through and he basically built the whole backstory.
Yeah,
of
pretty
the
much.
Candidate.
Yeah.
You know, so he was not only playing it, but he was playing his own creation. He was living his own art out, which I thought was, you know, it was amazing. Like,
yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Like, the Clive Barker story is great. Like, I mean, no, you know, No, I'm not throwing no shade on Clive.
Yeah,
Barker.
Obviously, the original story also has its you know.
It has its purpose and it meets its need, but definitely for this movie, Tony Todd definitely he knocked it out of the park on this.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because you were talking to me about this before, because you noticed that in Candyman, you see him kill a lot of like black people. And you would think, like, dude, if you were killed by, you know, slave owners, white people, and this and that, why are you going after black people? But you were telling me that, well, how did you put it?
Tony Todd actually went, these are Tony Todd's
words. Oh, sorry, Tony Todd's words, sorry.
They're not mine. But essentially, that was one thing that came into play a lot was the fact, like, what you're saying is a lot of people were like, hey, why isn't he just killing all these white people? Well, what Tony Todd relayed was that the white victims are, in the movie, are ignorant and dismissive.
Yeah.
So basically, their ignorance is somewhat like past. And
yeah.
They dismiss
it's expected
him.
Of them.
It is.
Yeah.
But for black people to forget Candyman is unforgivable.
Yeah.
And those are his words, and that holds a lot of precedent. That like unforgivable. That's you know.
Yeah.
That was deep, and that struck with me, and it sat with me when I read that quote, and you know it just really you know just the way it came off it just. It was played perfectly. Like, they have done, you know, sequels.
Yeah, the sequels are all right.
You know.
And with the second one, he also had input. He wanted to show the backstory of how, you know, he came to be, pretty much. How this society kind of shaped who he was and how he has to be. And that was good. The second one was really, really good. The third one, incorporating Hispanic culture with it, I think it overflowed everything that was supposed to be in it. It was enjoyable, but it wasn't. It's not going to have that same essence as obviously the first one did. Even the second one.
I think with the way that the second one went, I think it went very well because not necessarily. I don't think it was acted out as well, but I think the fact that obviously he was of Creole descent, he did have the French surname. You know, in his slave name, he was a. He was an aristocrat with a French surname. So that pulls into New Orleans. That's what New Orleans culture is all about.
Oh, yeah, dude, big time.
It's, you know, it's Creole, it's Cajun, it's all that. It's all pulled together.
Yeah.
But then when they went, I totally agree. When they went Day of the Dead, it's like, you know, there was nothing really leading it into, you know, Mexican culture and Hispanic culture where it could tie in and play comparatively. It didn't make sense.
And then they went, obviously, you have to have that biracial connection with, obviously, Candyman and his victim. You know, you had Helen in the first one, the girl from, who looked like the girl from, what's it called, from that one movie where Coolio did the soundtrack.
Oh, yeah, she looked very much like Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes, Michelle Pfeiffer in
Michelle Pfeiffer's character in Dangerous Minds.
Yeah, and
but
I think that's what that they were trying to play on, too.
Well, part three.
Part three.
Takes us to Tara Reid. Not literally, figuratively.
Figuratively. They went the very sex appeal route, and I think that's what killed it all as well.
Yeah.
Where the first, well, yes, you had like some nudity in the first one, not really that much in the second one, I believe. But the third one, you have like this very busty girl, obviously, and which I saw a lot of comments on, is that he's like trying to seduce her. Is he trying to just, you know...
And
actually,
it's supposed to be his great-great-granddaughter.
Yeah.
That's even, like, the more disturbing part.
Yeah,
is.
So that's what's like...
And the romance is gone. Like, in the first one, like you said, it played out very well.
Yeah.
When Candyman takes her, he lifts her up.
Yeah.
And they dance, and they have, like, this moment, and they engage.
Yeah.
In the third one, it's like the great-great-granddaughter, there's, like, this, like... sexy, like, ooh, scene. And you're like, what is going on here?
The first one, it was like he was reminded of his first lover. Like, she reminded him of the first love, pretty much. The third one was like, you remind me of that stripper that I met back in, you know,
back in
Vegas.
Spring Fling 98. Remember? We met at the pool on top of the palms.
And you might think, well, he had, like, did he have some kind of input? He actually didn't have a lot of input on the third one.
No.
He just, you know, as he said in his words, it was a cash grab. And they meant well, but he, you know. It wasn't.
Yeah, his
great.
Input was very minimal on that one.
Which I get, you know, and you could tell, obviously.
So with this being his memorial, don't put any of that on Tony Todd.
Yeah, no. The third one, don't put it on him.
Third one, don't put any of that on him.
Yeah, but the first one, yeah, obviously he had a huge input on his character, on how he moved and his voice to just making it deeper. So that way it was kind of more, like he says, it had weight to it with every word he said. It kind of made him seem taller than what he was with his voice. He was a very large figure, you know, how do I say it? Like, he was a scary figure without looking scary.
Yeah.
You know, because he's a very handsome man.
Oh, absolutely. He's very dapper. I mean, everything about this, you know, the scarf, the ascot kind of thing around his neck.
Yeah.
The lumbering appeal. Something I brought up. He's got high shine shoes, and they're tied nicely, right? How's he tying his shoes with the hook? I'm not trying to figure that out. I'm just saying, folks.
That's the biggest mystery in this movie.
That is it.
How is he tying his shoes?
You can do all kinds of stuff in Cabrini Green. Kids can disappear and everything, but Eric's trying to figure out how he's tying them shoes.
But yeah, man, he did such an amazing job, man, playing this character and then going on to play, obviously, in great roles as well. But yeah, man, it's kind of sad to see, you know, one of those icons kind of, you know, go. You know, his memory obviously is going to live on with these movies. But yeah, dude, like, it's so sad to see, but also it's so great to look at his legacy. And especially one of the biggest icons that he had, or biggest characters that he had. And yeah, just kind of talk about it, dude. It's, you know, so great. Hopefully we don't lose any more, so we don't have to make another episode. I want to make an episode just because I like their movies, not because they...
Yeah, because they passed on. They're no longer with us.
Yeah, because, I mean, obviously we were going to make a Candyman episode farther in the future, but unfortunately, you know.
Yeah, we got the news, and we actually had another movie lined up that we were going to do this week, but it just seemed fitting.
Felt like once we got to... Because he passed away on the 6th of November of this year, of 2024, and from what I saw, I didn't get the news until the 8th.
I didn't.
Until my birthday. Yeah. And I'm like, dude, like, this can't be just now. Like, it was said the 6th. And I'm like, dude, I didn't hear anything until the 8th. And that's what a lot of people, they didn't get the news until the 8th. But it was determined that he passed on the 6th. I don't know what the cause of death was. I didn't look too much into it. I just know, you know, he was gone. 69 years old. I think he still had a lot still left in him.
Yeah.
Man. But, you know, stuff happens. But, you know, rest in peace to him, man. His memory's going to live on in these movies. And we thank you so much for listening. And yeah, just follow us on Instagram at podcastpetrified24 on Instagram. Link will also be in the description of this episode. Yeah, just give us a follow. Tell us what you think about Candyman, what you like, hated, and tell us what you think about this podcast.
Absolutely.
We're trying to get it up on Apple Podcasts. There's a lot of hoops we got to go through, but it will be on Apple Podcasts very soon. But for now, you know, we'll stay on Spotify, Amazon, Pandora. But yeah, thank you so much for listening, guys. And yeah, we'll see y'all next week.
See you next week.